Fred Film Radio, Berlin International Film Festival, Germany.
Fred Film Radio, this is Niccolò Comotti here at the 68th Berlinale, and today I'm joined by Eric Poppe, director of the film Utøya, July 22. So Eric, first thing first, what does this film represent for you?
It's my sort of take on want to sort of go in and show as honest possible way the face on terror, how it is. It's not that it's not been shown in some movies, maybe, but I think, or at least in some books, but I felt that it was important to bring that story up to screen based on the fact that for a long time, not only me, but a lot of the young people, the relatives, the parents who lost the ones, have been realizing more and more that the story about what took place out there on the island has been fading away more and more. And that's sort of been the issue in this film, to see that I think we need to realize what took place. Of course, it's a natural way for us as human beings to sort of want to have a distance as well, because it's hard to be in that reality, realizing what takes place. But I wanted to bring that up to the screen, not only as some sort of a healing process for the Norwegian community and for the survivors and the parents themselves, but also for the fact that there is right now a development, there is a race of groups, neo-fascism coming up in Europe, because this is a face of a right-wing attack in Norway, but it can take place other ways as well. So I felt that was quite important to also bring into the subject. Not to put it straight into the story, but the fact that I wanted to start the film by documentary shots from downtown Oslo, which was his bomb towards the government building, which was his attack on the democracy, and then move on to the young people and take the future away from us, seems quite important for me to bring into the subject.
At the time, everybody focused so much on Breivik and his horrifying and yet carefully planned act. Does the film try to shift the attention?
Of course, we all get curious about what's the power, what's the idea behind such an horrible act. So, of course, people in the whole world seems to be interested in who are this guy who did this and what was his idea. I don't want to go further into that because that's the wider story about the 22nd of July. I felt it was not of my interest to tell the whole story. I felt to go in and make a slice, but bring, for me, the most important thing, the heart of his act, and show that from the punk young people's point of view was for me more important than to go in and try to understand him. And I know Paul Greengrass is doing his take on that, and we'll probably go further into that. So for me, the most important thing was to go in there and show the terror in face of these young people and how that was.
What was the difficulty in kind of like representing terrorism as well? People will see this film and they will try to find also a sort of definition.
We'll be the first one to say that I'm not an expert in terrorism, and neither do I want to be. But I've been studying this case quite close, and it was done by this terrorist by this reason. So we shouldn't hide that away. And we shouldn't try to make him insane, because really many people thought this act was so crazy that it would be done by an insane man. But we must remember, he wasn't insane. In court, they also decided he wasn't insane. But he was preparing this act for several years. So it's important for the survivors and for the parents to never forget that. It was a political attack.
Although we do not see him almost at all in the film, we still sense Breivik's calmness and stillness with which he perpetrated the attack.
And it struck all of us when he appeared in court, and when we heard about all the young people expressed how he was walking calmly around on the island. But what seemed important for me is that what he performed, the type of terror that these young kids, you know, experienced, is, of course, the massive violence by him walking around and shooting. But why I didn't want to make him more close appearance in the film is because this is how most of the kids experienced him. They saw him and they tried to hide. And that's, for me, the only way of showing it. I didn't want to keep him out of the story, but I think his presence is there all the time by the sound, which for me was important, that sound, that horror, that terrifying sound is going on all the time.
Do you think also that one of the biggest issues, or let's say dilemmas of the film, is how we could actually forget the reality and the effect caused by this attack and just consider it almost as a part of a dramatic construct?
I agree. I think it's important for me to bring up the issue that we need to deal with this film as a portrait of one act. It can't say too much more than this act. But we can see other acts as well, of course. But then we need to see, most of all, how it is to be inside it. And I would say that, I mean, and I express that, I think there is hope in this film. There is hope in those people who survived this act. It's hope for all of us also in how we deal with them, how we are able to bring them back to the society. And I think there's hope in how we deal with this as a society, because so many of these acts are done by single individuals. And they seem to act a lot because they feel they're outside the society. So how can we deal with that and keep them inside the society? Even allow them to express themselves, even if I hate what they say, but allow them to be within our community. And I think this is something we can do. This is something we should talk about, because we do have a responsibility, even, you know, if we are far away in a distance. And I think this is our way to deal with this, what we can do. And then we can, of course, stand up for our politicians and say, is there anything you can do with this? People have asked me about what took place in the United States less than a week ago, and I don't want to put them up to each other at all. They have their problem with the gun control or whatever. But once again, I want to show what took place inside in the middle and use that option as we as a filmmakers do have to tell a story emotionally and see what we can do that words can't do. And I think this is why it's important for me to give it a try.
What about the families affected by it? How will they react?
Yeah, I have conducted 3 weeks now of screenings all over Europe, more than 20 screenings, 20 full cinemas all around, inviting them in closed screenings before you guys were able to see them and the rest of the audience. So they have been in there and by themselves with a lot of psychiatric and psychological assistance and aid personnel on all the screenings for them to have their support. And that has, of course, because there was a lot of skepticism in the beginning, is it possible to transform this into a film? Will this be a speculative movie or whatever? So what we have realized is that if I sort of share a headline out of what came out of those screenings, of course, it was good for them to see the film. And most of all, it was good for them to realize what this film was not about. And also that the skepticism was, in general, turn out to a supportive and positive feeling against the film.
If I weren't informed or simply did not know the subject, I would easily exchange this almost as a horror movie. Were you concerned about this possibility?
Absolutely. It would be wrong not to admit that, you know, what's the difference between a movie and reality? And how do we deal with this? What are we working on? What is this, you know? Well, it is a movie, it's a film. But how can we express it and how can we work with dignity, go into these subjects with honesty, and say that when you're putting this story together, it's done by ethical reasons that we make a fiction. But it's based on all these interviews we had to put in a reflection on what took place. We really didn't want to make it more dramatic, but neither less dramatic. So that's why I brought in a group of the survivors, three of them you met yesterday, who were there all the time, to help us and be my sort of no persons, or why are we doing that? And they were not only supporting me, but they were sort of doing this together with me to get it as correct as possible. And then think that when we did the script, not to follow a natural structure, forget about that, but just put these things together and see how it turned out to be. And as you know, also the end of the film sort of upset someone. But I would say this is a film about how coincidence also takes away some of the best, if you see what I mean. Whether you do something on that way, that was what took place on that island. I mean, by coincidence, someone were killed, someone were not killed.
What impact do you think this film will have on Norwegian society?
Well, of course, it's all about before and after. We all are carrying that moment on our shoulders. We have said that the 9th of April 1940, the war came to Norway. We felt that it was an attack against our democracy. And it's important to remember that this was also an attack against our democracy, not only against these youth, but young people. So it's our 9th of April, in a way, our generation. And it still scars, deep, deep, deep scars in the Norwegian soul. But the way to deal with it is, of course, mostly what has been done, the way they try to make a fair court as possible towards the terrorist, where someone thought that it's possible. But still, but then again, we have been, from the weeks after the attack until now, also been realizing that this is, you know, we are losing a bit contact with what took place. We need to go on. But then comes the moment that we have to need to say that, you know, it is important that we don't forget about this, because this is the fuel for us to see how we can prevent it happening again.
You said that this film was part of a healing process for the survivors' family, or maybe the families who lost their loved ones in the attack in Utøya. Could you talk about that?
And I would say that they got angry. Not any longer angry by the film. They were appreciating the film, actually, but they got angry about this, and it was also some sort of a healing process for them in a way. And that's something. To go through it is also to be able to know that the story is alive, it's there. And for so many of the young people who were out on that island, they have had so hard expressing what took place, and for them to see the film now and feel that the film is actually reflecting so much of what they experienced out there. And the fact that it's not more dramatizing, but neither less, it's as it was. It was that horrifying. Helps them. So what they said that, I'm now able to say to someone, what's the film? It's not my story in full, but there are details, you know, that and that. But that makes it easy for me to sit down, and then we can talk about my story. And that's been spreading out quite wide now among these young people, these 550 people who were out there on the island. 99 altogether were killed, 77 on the island. But it's sort of like... so for them, that's been a big change now as they have been able to see the film.
Was it particularly challenging finding all these young actors as well for the film?
I think it's, for me, it was important to bring in amateurs. There are no professional actors in this age range in Norway, really. By doing it, it was also important to get the talent together. For me, the big thrill and question and would keep me awake during the nights was, is it possible? One thing is it possible to transform this into a movie? But as we felt it could work, and we saw that it would be reasonable to believe that, the thing is, how is it possible to find those actors? And is it possible to bring them into this state of mind? which, I mean, Robert De Niro is struggling with. Everyone, I mean, the most professional ones is struggling with that, to be really honest. And the film was even dependent on their performances and on Andrea Berns' performance, you know, in general. So that was, of course, the question. But it was no question about bringing in any other ones than those amateurs. And I must also say that in my early movies as well, I have always been bringing in amateurs together with professionals. Even working with Juliette Binoche, I've been bringing in amateurs in significant parts. So, and I think, I mean, like Juliette enjoys it. Everyone enjoys it. If you do it unreal, if you work truthful and honest with them. And another thing is, of course, what it depends on is that we have time enough. So by working through a half year to find those actors is also then to start a process with 3 months of intense practicing.
Could you tell us more about the choice of shooting it in one take?
It's basically about preparing. Everything in the film is planned. It needs to be planned. I didn't allow the actors to improvise, because that would make 10 kids talking in their mouth towards each other, and I would lose my whole film, the whole story. So it was important that we had time enough and deep focus to work through the whole summer in workshops all the time, for them to be able to get the text through the bodies and make them their own, and create a trust between them and me as individuals and as a group. I did have finally 5 days, mm-hmm, with a chance of doing one take each day. Mm-hmm. I showed some material which I had done myself when I was in Congo, and something from Afghanistan to my DOP when I was turning my camera on, and I was there trying to capture what takes on what happens, and some of them are takes running for 15-20 minutes. And what takes place there is a combination of trying to tell a story and take care of the story as well. I'm not the most hard battle type. I hate that, and I don't want to be in that category. I'm not that brave, but the material enough shows enough what it is to be out there, and in a way that's a quite honest picture of what takes place. So that material was screened and looked at and studied, and to see what's the qualities in all the mistakes.
Always going back to the young actors, how did you prepare to work with them? I mean, most of them are still kids. And
I was preparing myself by having research done, you know, with the psychiatrists and psychologists on that case. And one of my closest friends is a doctor, professor of medicine, who has been a lot in Gaza with people in between his hands losing their lives. So he shared a lot. They all shared a lot. And I feel enormous support from whoever I contacted before the film, actually, to help to give what I needed to make this as right as possible. It, in a way, it helped a bit that my track record has been to try to work as serious as I can with other subjects before. So it helped in a way to get access to some of those people. But to get that, first I needed to know how that was. And then for me it was to bring those one into it. And so I worked one by one for a long time. I mean, we had 3 months both practicing, but talking about this and getting it right. Well, what I told them is, don't watch a single movie to study what it is for someone to die on the screen or to be in panic, because the movies don't tell the truth. Let's talk to someone else. Let's get information from somewhere else and entirely use that information. So that was basically what we did, and that was I did, and that was what we did. So I said that I don't want a single moment of you expressing what you think I want to see. If you don't have anything inside yourself, don't show it. Just don't show anything. But most of all, go into the emotional state of mind And just be in the mind. Don't even try to express it, because what comes out, comes out.
And lastly, what do you think the average audience, how do you think the average audience will absorb and react to the film? And maybe if Breivik watched it, do you think that there's also a risk that he would appreciate it?
Well, I would say it's hard to comment that. I agree. But I would say that people have discussed, if you're going to make a movie about this, wouldn't you give some sort of attention to him again? But then again, it's easy to answer, because either we don't talk about 22nd of July or we do. And if we don't, he has won. And if we do, the only thing we can do is to treat it as good as we can. And in a way, people say that the film is terrifying to see. Now, I can share with you, not more than less than 2 weeks ago, he made a letter to his psychiatrist in the prison where he said, for the first time, I regret. So, maybe people, and some of those who have been on the film, and some of the survivors said, you know, tie him to a chair and show the film. So in a way, we should hope he might see the film. There was someone expressing questions about it in media, making articles. I mean, there's been a lot about this film in the last year in media. But that's basically been based on the fact that people, of course, didn't know what the film was about or what type of film it was. So what we have seen now as we started to open the film is that some of those ones, or a lot of those ones, have been able to see the film and has changed their position. And it ended up by some of the most skeptical to the film. She wrote an article in Nordlys, the Norwegian paper up in the north, expressing herself and saying that 2 months ago I said no to this film. Now I've seen it. Now I hope everyone will go to the cinema and see the film.
Thank you very much to Erik Poppe here for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.